When a teenager gets in trouble with the law, there are consequences to face. Many juvenile cases end up working with the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program, or VORP. I spoke with the executive director, Jennifer Payden. The Victim Offender Reconciliation Program is a program working with first-time offender youth to try and see where they've gone wrong and make them think twice before they get themselves in trouble again.
It's about working to give them some internal constructs as to where they're going. Would they like to make that choice for a second time, or would they like to make a different choice that would be more to their own benefit? And the person that's key is the victim. Only the victim can confront a young offender about their behavior and have it be specifically meaningful to that actual situation.
Let's step through the process of exactly what happens. In particular, you're working with juvenile offenders.
Absolutely, just juvenile offenders.
It's their first time.
Yes.
How do they hook up with VORP?
It's all court related. When they have a citation against them at the juvenile court that's been written by the police department here in Chattanooga, that citation will be processed through two areas, either through the magistrate's court bench or through informal adjustment area of the court. If the parent and child agree to participate, they come through to the VORP office. We go through an intake process and then they are assigned a facilitator. This is a trained person who can then take them back out into the community to meet with their victims. Of course, the parent is involved at the time that anything is done with these children.
So the parent and the child who has wronged someone, they meet the victim. How do they reconcile what they have done?
Everything that we do, we think about before we do. In teaching a child to be responsible, what you're trying to form is that cognitive thought process, that reflective process that helps them learn how to be responsible or control themselves in an appropriate manner that fits with our society. The intent and the reflection period when we're in the meetings is to help these young people go through that internal process so that the next time they're tempted to shoplift, and we do approximately 75 to 80% shoplifting offenses, they can go, no, maybe that's not such a good idea. You know, this didn't work out very well for me the first time. I shot myself in the foot the first time. Do I really want to do this the second time? And it's not so much about punishment. It's about attitude change, reflection, and knowing that somebody on the other side of their crime is being hurt by what they do, that there are consequences for the victim. That's really what helps to give them that internal boundary that says, no, that was probably a bad idea the first time, and maybe I really shouldn't do it the second time.
With adults, the big focus is the recidivism rate.
Yes, it is very difficult to track long-term about recidivism. But after a year, we can usually go through records. The court will, at my request and the judge's permission, pull records to see if those names that we've worked with in the past have come up in any sense as a repeat offense. Those that have come through the program for the first time and have had no other issues previous to that, 2 years ago when we pulled those numbers, only three of them had had a repeat offense after 12 months, which is just outstandingly good for any program. Normal recidivism rates for most counties are about 50%. And if you go further west in California, some of them have been as high as 80%. So anything that we can get that's even under 30%, 20%, wow, we've got some impact in the community long term. I like to think of it as a stitch in time saves nine. The earlier you can ask questions and have young people think about what they're doing, the better it is, the quicker they learn from their mistakes. Because we all make mistakes. I mean, you've made mistakes. I've made mistakes. Mistakes happen constantly.
Now I want to take it and reverse the roles a bit and have you describe it from the point of the child.
Here they are. They're at court. Their first offense, it's a little scary. The parent, and it's usually, whether we like it or not, a single-parent family. 75% of the young people come through my program. They have one parent. There they are. They know they've messed up. They're worried about it. They don't know quite how things are going to go. They want it to be over. They want to put it behind them. So they come, they're rather nervous. Sometimes they're shy, sometimes they're very angry, sometimes they're crying. There's all sorts of different ways that they appear in court. And it's our job to be able to, with kindness and direction, lead them forward through where they find themselves to a new place. And we hope that it'll be a new place where they don't ever commit another crime, because for them, it is a big mistake to be a repeat offender.
You have some examples of voice.
Many times when the victim has a chance to ask for something, they will ask them to write about their goals. They'll ask them to write an apology, or they'll ask them to think about ways they would do things better the next time. And this is just one little clip out of a recent writing by a young man, 17 years of age. But I did steal, and I regret it. It has changed me and made me have to think more clearly. A man should have more integrity. Not only that, but also be honest and man up to pay for the things he has done. I am deeply sorry for everything that I had to put you through, and your store too. I want to thank you for letting me take a chance to make up for what I did and allowing me to have an extra chance. I hope that you can trust me when I say, I give you my word that it will never happen again.
Are the people involved, the young people involved, are they all required to keep a journal or journalize their feelings?
No, we don't necessarily have them journalize their feelings, but they are allowed to write whatever they want to in their restitutions. And restitutions aren't just about monies paid back or replacements. Restitutions really are about the reconciliation between the store or the vandalized individual, the lady that had her garden destroyed or a tree chopped down. Or restitutions are about that victim being able to ask the questions directly of the young person as to why they did it, and then be able to say, well, I would like you to write something about this, or I'd like you to draw me a picture. To me, artwork creates that reflective process that we're after. We're after them thinking about how it could be the next time. How would they avoid being where they found themselves the first time? And learning about peer pressure. Part of all of this is about peer pressure. Sometimes it's two or three of them have been in and stolen from stores, or sometimes it's two or three of them have vandalized, you know, a whole row of mailboxes. Whatever the incident has been, we need that reflective process so it doesn't happen a second time.
Your facilitators are volunteers?
My facilitators or mediators, yes, are volunteers. In the Hamilton County Court, we call them facilitators, but not all of them are listed Rule 31 mediators with the state of Tennessee. We want to make that distinction. Under Tennessee law, a facilitator is somebody that brings two sides together and has a conversation and is the facilitator between two parties. Some of the key things for mediation in the state of Tennessee is confidentiality. All of these meetings are completely confidential. The second thing is neutrality. The facilitator or the mediator is a neutral who brings two sides together. Third thing is that it is always voluntary. You can't have a decent discussion with people under duress about an incident that happens. So it's always voluntary. It is always where the young person is not addicted. We don't deal with any addicted young individuals, because if you're addicted, you're not able to necessarily reflect accurately about the incident that you created. This is a small case of a facilitator who had a young woman that came through. This case involved a 14-year-old female who shoplifted a pair of slacks to go with a polo shirt. She was extremely polite and sorry that she had stolen the merchandise, as she knew it was not the right thing to do. Upon further conversation, I learned that she had taken the clothes because school was about to start, and she did not have the proper clothing to meet the school dress code, and she had no money. But she wanted to go to school. She had to make good grades, and she wanted to be in class. While the case went straightforward and was settled amicably with the store's loss prevention manager, I found it problematic that a public school can require certain clothing that many students may not be able to afford. Is there a solution for these young people?
So a lot of times the motivation is not so much intrinsic or their own desire, but they are being pressured not just by their peers, but by society.
Absolutely. Poverty, as we all know, is the hotbed where crime can grow. we think about how society can change and what we can do and what restrictions we can do. But at the base, the underlying cause of a lot of crime, and in the juvenile situation, the distress and the agonizing life experiences that happen, is poverty. Maybe that is a goal that we could work on in this community.
You can support VORP by participating in Gems for Justice. VORP eggs containing semi-precious gemstones and a ticket for a chance to win a solitaire diamond worth almost $4,000 can be purchased. Limit 5 eggs per person. The final drawing for Gems for Justice will take place March 30th at noon. Call 423-605-3725 for details on where to purchase Gems for Justice. For WUTC's Around and About, this is Rabbit.